Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee kurup, guten tag, jau viva katbang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget pharmaceutical kill, vivisection prison, killitary industrial core poor nation, in the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy mocracy criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NRA, NSA, USA, home of Uncle Sam Manila, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. I'm all excited because I'm packing to head south to Southern California for the Natural Products Expo at the Anaheim Convention Center next weekend. It's my favorite time to go to Anaheim. It's when I don't get arrested because there's no Ringling Brothers there at this time of year. This is my fun weekend in Anaheim. Really, one of my favorite weekends of the year. I get to be a vegan foodie. You know, the fun part of my life is a vegan, and you know, I can allow myself to be distracted for a moment from all of the animal suffering and torture and killing that motivate me to continue to produce this program week after week for 13 years now. Now syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. You perhaps heard us on the Air America Network and CBS and Clear Channel radio stations. We're live every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific time. Except for next Sunday, Daisy, we're on the radio, Daisy. Except for next Sunday when, you know, I'll be wandering around the convention center. So we'll play a rerun of a recent program, and our next new show will be Sunday, March 16th, when I will do a review of all the great new products that I find at the Natural Products Expo. And looking ahead to March 23rd, you know, with all these wacky so-called animal advocates telling us to eat at Chipotle, even though Chipotle has risen to number three, the number three restaurant chain based on deceptive animal welfare marketing. And now I see there's an article in Salon.com about Chipotle. And, you know, I don't want to know... I don't know what other slash food flesh selling restaurants these pseudo advocates are advocating for us to patronize, but I think it's time that we take a stand and support our local 100% vegan restaurants. You know, the owners of vegan restaurants are community heroes. They're doing planetary rescue work, actually bringing the life saving food to the people, usually on a tight budget. You know, and we're going to pass them up and go spend money at Chipotle or Subway, or remember when Burger King had some sort of veggie burger that wasn't even vegan? I mean, yet some pseudo animal advocates were actually eating it, saying it was, well, essentially vegan. I think there may have been dairy in the bun or in the sauce. And do you think these restaurants really care about separating animal products from others during preparation or cooking? You know, wouldn't it just be terrible if you got some weird karmic cross-contamination disease because you chose to eat at Chipotle instead of a local vegan restaurant where the food isn't just essentially vegan? I mean, it is vegan. It's a vegan restaurant, right? And I really don't understand why you would want to eat at a place like Chipotle and give Chipotle your money just because Chipotle throws the vegans a bone. Kind of find it chilling to the bone. You know, every time that PETA gives Chipotle an award, or Mercy for Animals, or HSUS, and sing Chipotle's praises, and Veg News puts an article out saying how wonderful the food at Chipotle is, that's like a vegan actually making a donation to the Humane Society of the United States, which is a rancher advocacy organization, which literally throws vegans bones, and then convinces them that that's what actual animal advocacy is. The latest scam from HSUS, and I've been sending the picture of this slide around on Twitter and Facebook. So the latest form of animal advocacy, as defined by HSUS, is eating the entire animal from nose to tail. It was promoting this at an HSUS event where HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, was serving dead animal burgers, and HSUS staff was eating them. What kind of job is Paul Shapiro doing? He's vice president of Farm Animal Protection of HSUS, and he can't even protect animals from winding up as sandwiches eaten by his coworkers, huh? So one of the slides at this pro-meat, anti-vegan HSUS event suggested resources for, the HSUS butcher clientele. So here's must reading from HSUS. There's a book, you have to get it. It's called The Whole Beast, Nose to Tail Eating by Fergus Henderson. Okay, and then also add to your must reading Odd Bits, How to Cook the Rest of the Animal by Jennifer McLaken. Okay. Let's see, there's another book in the charcuterie, The Fatted Calf's Guide to Making Sausage, Salami, it says salami, did they mean salami? Salami, pâtés, roasts, confits and other meaty goods by Taylor Bodicher and Taponia Miller. Oh, and one more link from HSUS to support your path to ethical veganism, a link to The Whole Animal Buying Guide for Beef and Pork Products. I know, these are all necessary little incremental baby steps that will certainly lead to animal liberation and a vegan world. I get it. As vegans adopt HSUS recipes and learn to prepare, anal pork casserole with lymph node gravy, perhaps, or tail hair spaghetti with eyeballs in lip sauce, as we learn to fill up on body parts previously considered inedible, that will mean, fewer animals will have to be killed if we eat, more of their body parts, essentially. We save more animals by eating more of the animal we're already eating. And I'm sure some vegans are already swallowing this logic, this propaganda handed down from the high priests of death. Who elected them? I don't know if the animals elected them, huh? This logic, just as they campaigned for egg industry written legislation when HSUS said support it, even though it meant everyone had to reverse positions on cruel furnished or enriched battery cages, and instead of opposing them, now had to support them and campaign for them. And no one can explain why. I invite you to ask HSUS or Farm Sanctuary, Mercy for Animals, Compassion Over Killing, the ASPCA, Animal Legal Defense Fund, and Farm, the ones who are organizing the so-called Animal Rights Conference. What changed overnight when one day you oppose enriched cages for being too cruel, too torturous to the birds mentally and physically, and then the next day you are just following orders and condemning chickens to concentration camp conditions forever, with any attempted legislative improvements prohibited? This is really one of the greatest betrayals of animals ever. I think it's unforgivable. In Defense of Animals was going through a personnel upheaval at the time. It had been a supporter of the Rotten Egg Bill, but now opposes it. What about the other groups? They have done infinite harm to millions, perhaps billions of birds, by putting an animal rights seal of approval on conditions previously condemned by the animal rights movement, whatever that is or was. Enriched cages are now the humane standard and will probably turn out to be that way in Prop 2 Confused California, where two of those groups, Farm Sanctuary and Mercy for Animals, are headquartered. So what kind of animal rights movement is this? And why is Farm a credible organization of some, you know, upcoming animal rights conference? I mean, it isn't. And not just because it's banned me from speaking, and Gary Francione has stated he would not attend even if invited. It just shows that, you know, there's a need to hit the reset button on the animal rights movement. All right? You know, I think that's what's necessary. With veganism front and center, and I just want you to know, when I'm in Southern California, I'll also be shopping for a venue for a real vegan conference. You know, I mean, Gary agrees that we need one, and, you know, while it's very preliminary, maybe in pencil on your calendar for 2015, just save the weekend of March 20th, 21st and 22nd of 2015. You know, I don't know how this is going to happen. You know, I don't know how it'll be financed. But I didn't know any of that when I started organizing World Fest in LA in 2000. It's just I'm hearing people clamoring for it, and a real vegan conference and event are most necessary. I mean, even with all of these so-called animal advocates being against ag gag, you know, they knowingly gag some of the most important information related to animal ag, information that the public needs to know on the environment. 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions are caused by animal agriculture. Really? Am I out of time already? Time flies when you're on the air doing Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Okay, coming up, size matters. How about meat, hunting, and brain size? We'll talk to Jerry Friedman. And equal time for aquatic life. We will talk with Mary Finelli of Fishfeel and animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. Coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. On Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. Facebook, there's a Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden page. There are two other Bob Linden pages on Facebook, and you can support the program with a tax-deductible donation by clicking donate at goveganradio.com, where there are hundreds of free archives. I can see this is one of those shows that's just going to fly by. I'm not going to get to anything. I was just talking about ag gag, and well, the New York Times has something from the Associated Press dated February 28th. It says Governor C.L. Butch Otter on Friday signed a bill threatening anyone who secretly films animal abuse at agricultural facilities with a year in jail and a $5,000 fine. Mr. Otter, a rancher, said the measure promoted by the dairy industry is about agriculture products being secure in their property and their livelihood. The bill came in response to video released by the vegetarian and animal rights group Mercy for Animals showing workers at Betancourt Dairy beating, stomping, and sexually abusing cows in 2012. In other words, showing business as usual on an animal agriculture facility. Okay, well, nobody's for suppression of the right to free speech and undercover investigations, even though, you know, we should be saying you have to go vegan if you don't want to participate in anything from the, you know, beating, stomping, sexual abuse. Oh, and also, like, you know, stabbing them in the throat, letting them bleed, beheading them, you know, the kind of killing stuff that, you know, we seem to ignore. But I'm wondering, you know, about this, you know, it's like this animal ag gag order, you know, the most important animal ag information that the public needs to know on the environment. Everybody's against climate change. Well, 51% of greenhouse gas emissions are caused by animal agriculture, yet these groups stay with statistics from the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, which is an organization that has been shown to underestimate environmental effects of animal agriculture, and it supports factory farming. HSUS is an FAO partner in helping the world meet a 70% increase in animal agriculture products by 2050. So I don't really know why these groups, none of them quote the 51% from the World Bank, environmental experts there, and the World Watch Institute. It should be 51%, but these groups want to say 18%. And often these groups say, you know, they're for sustainable agriculture. You know, the grass fed, like the grass-fed cows who produce up to 400% more methane than the factory farm cows. I see that we have in the New York Times today, Sunday Review Opinion, the article, Support Your Local Slaughterhouse. She's crying about Nyman Ranch. This is one of the owners of Nyman Ranch. She's complaining that she's Mrs. Nyman, actually. She's complaining that her ranch and other ranches marketing so-called grass-fed and organic meat are caught up in the Rancho Feeding Company 8.7 million pound recall. The humane killer, Nicolette Nyman, said, quote, complying with the recall would mean destroying over 100,000 pounds of meat we had intentionally frozen throughout the year to extend our beef season. Continuing to quote, while it is painful to see our beautiful animals die, my husband Bill or our cattle manager have always accompanied every single one to the slaughterhouse stunning area. Oh, that's good, because at least, you know, the cows know before they die who personally betrayed them and was complicit in their murder after totally trusting them. Yeah, great idea. I think it's more painful for the cows than Mrs. Nyman there, who, along with her husband, you know, must be suffering intense psychological trauma, doing the wrong thing all the time for profit. And if it weren't the wrong thing, it wouldn't be painful for her, would it? So wipe away those tears with dollar bills. You know, the dollar bills pay to Nyman Ranch by Chipotle, which purchases its pig murder victims from Nyman. Nyman's a supplier of so-called pork, beef, lamb, and poultry, all looked after with caring, teary eyes. Quote, we and about 35 other farming and ranching families are the collateral damage. Oh, so there is some good news here in this article. That's great. That's a start. Quote, beyond the immediate... Is time accelerated here? I'm not getting to anything today. Okay, Jerry Friedman coming up. Maybe my brain isn't working. Well, let's talk about brain size and meat eating and hunting. That's coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. If you'd like to sponsor the program and advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products and services, you can get in touch with me by emailing bob@goveganradio.com. I can see the program is going to fly by this week. Wrapping up what I was saying before the break with Niman Ranch, it's going to appeal the recall, the being part of the 8.7 million pound recall from Rancho Feeding, because Niman thinks that, you know, we need a local slaughterhouse, and Rancho Feeding was the last slaughterhouse in the Bay Area. I think we should just celebrate that. You know, no more slaughterhouses in the Bay Area. So that would be great. Let's start here and work our way everywhere. My first guest today is a good friend of mine who has been a longtime advocate for animals. He is now an attorney practicing law in Texas. Jerry Friedman, how are you today?
I'm doing terrific. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being with us on today's program. Occasionally we hear something that goes by, some wild hypothesis, some theory, and, I guess kind of floating out there is that humans needed to eat meat or needed to hunt for our brains to grow to where they have grown today. And I don't know, since I see humans as herbivores and think, if people really use their brains, they wouldn't want to get cancer, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, and destroy the environment and all of that, and so they wouldn't eat meat. But here we have more propaganda coming our way. I didn't do much research into it, but apparently this interested you. How did this catch your attention, and why did you decide to research it?
Thank you. Yeah, a few years ago, I heard the story. Leslie Aiello, who's an anthropologist, she came out with a theory that eating meat was necessary for the human brain to grow. And I've heard this before, and I've heard this after, and to me, just intuitively, it didn't make any sense. I mean, we don't have any records of dinosaurs, meat-eating dinosaurs, going into the Bronze Age or forging iron or anything of the sort. We just don't think of tigers as having rocket technology. Not only is it that meat doesn't cause human brain growth, though, it's the same thing with plants. We have large brain plant eaters like elephants, and they're not known for any kind of technological advances. And so the whole idea that piqued my interest was, what is the relationship between what we eat and the growth of the human brain? And my research says there is no relationship between these two things. Hmm. Some people, like Leslie Aiello and some other anthropologists, and even some other authors, I'm sure you're familiar with Lierre Keith. So even some people in our normal pop culture have this idea, and they're propagating this idea as though we owe some obligation to eating meat for crediting our large brain, but that relationship isn't there. It's a myth.
Hmm. And we get paid back in the end by, if we eat meat now, meat and dairy inhibit blood flow to the brain, and you get a stroke. And thanks, right? For,
yes, right.
Which makes no sense. So what did the researchers? What's their reasoning? And tell me what's wrong with what they had to say.
Sure. So I don't want to paint them all with a broad brush. There are a few significant researchers, anthropologists, who believe this, but by no means all researchers don't necessarily believe this. But those who support this idea, those who believe this idea, they think that there's really two directions. One is that either by hunting, when we were hunting other animals, that the more successful and the more intelligent our ancestors were at hunting other animals, it meant that they were able to feed their families more food, and by feeding more food, it meant their families survived better, and this encouraged this relationship between smarter ancestors being more successful hunters, feeding their families more, and their brain keeps growing in this direction. So that idea has been thoroughly discredited. That's called the man the hunter hypothesis, and it fell apart probably in the 70s and 80s, but there's still this recurring theme this obedience to meat, and so it keeps on, this idea of meat keeps on returning in one way, shape, or form or another. So the other big branch of why eating meat had helped us was because caused our brains to grow, is because it's been observed that in our ancestors, and the fossil evidence shows that as our brain was increasing in size, so as the fossil skulls of our ancestors were growing, that our guts were shrinking, our stomach and our large intestine and small intestine were actually shrinking. And they can tell that both by the shape of our rib cage and also because other primates, the gorillas, the chimpanzees, orangutans, other primates have a much larger gut than ours. So, for example, gorillas have a smaller brain and a larger gut. Chimpanzees have a smaller brain, larger gut. Orangutans, smaller brain, larger gut. Whereas humans have a larger brain and a smaller gut. And so they were looking at how these changes took place in human anatomy, and then they compared that to the fossil record of how we know when we started eating meat. And so just by comparing these two, they were saying, well, look, as humans were eating more meat, our brain was growing and our gut was shrinking. And so they wrapped these three together and said that meat must have been the cause of our brains to grow. And then once again, this whole idea has been discredited in other ways, and that's the focus of my research. So, for example, if you want to just look at correlation, if you want to look at the correlation of what these researchers did of looking at when humans were eating meat and when our brain was growing, if you look at correlation, you'll see that other animals in the savannah where our ancestors evolved, if you look at all of the other animals there, if you look at the elephants, the hippopotami, the lions, the alligators, all of them have a pretty small brain compared to their body size. And so if you're looking at correlation, you see that the animals in the savannah have a small brain, large body. It doesn't explain why humans have a large brain and a small body. Or the other correlation is that if you look at carnivores generally, if you look at lions and wolves, again, alligators and sharks, carnivores generally have a small brain compared to their body size. And so when you're looking at correlation, it doesn't seem like meat has anything to do with brain growth. And then most importantly, if you're looking at correlation, we see that social animals have a large brain to a smaller body. And this will include all of the primates who generally have a larger brain to a smaller body size. It includes the bottlenose dolphin, who has a large brain, small body size. It includes crows, who for birds, they have a large brain and a small body size. And even there are four species of hyena. Hyenas are, of course, meat eaters. There are four species. Of these four species, the most social hyena has the largest brain to body size of the group.
Mm. Now, I wonder, well, does size really matter? I mean, a pigeon has a much smaller brain than humans, but I think pigeons are brilliant. You know, all animals seem to be brilliant and function quite intelligently with the size brain that they have. So why this emphasis on a bigger brain?
Well, the easy answer to that is because humans have a fairly large brain of all the animal kingdom. Of course, humans will tend to say, hey, we have a great brain, and that must be what's important. So, you know, you can go through the thought experiment, and if you ask a lobster what's the most important feature, they might say, well, probably a different size claw. If you have a larger left size claw than a right size claw, it's important, right? And so that's the tendency that we would think is because humans have a large brain, then of course we say, well, a large brain matters. But what you're saying is exactly true, even on intelligence, because like Einstein had a smaller than average size brain. If you look at men and women, men tend to have a larger brain, but that doesn't mean that men are more intelligent. And even if you look at different races, Europeans tend to have a large brain. That doesn't mean that Europeans are more intelligent. Of course, decades and centuries ago, the Europeans would tell you that, but we know that's not true. And if you want to wonder why the Europeans probably had a large brain, it's probably because it was colder there and their brain grew to keep the brain warmer. It was pretty cold there. The same reason why the Neanderthals had an unusually large brain is because it was cold in Europe. So it's probably more to do with temperature regulation than intelligence. And so that suggests that if we look at just the size of the brain, we're really missing out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, I've often heard that carbs feed the brain. Is that a revolutionary thought, or do we all know that carbs feed the brain?
Yeah, absolutely. So the generally speaking, the brain gets cleaner energy from carbs, and if it has to, it will get energy from either fat or protein. But either of these choices are lesser choices for the brain. The preference for the brain is to get it from carbs, from sugars. It is the healthier way for the brain to get energy. It has less toxic byproducts, etc. So, in fact, the whole human animal is designed to get energy from carbs. We are capable of getting it from fat and meat if need be, but it's not how the body wants to operate.
Mm. And so the thought then was that the brain grew from hunting because we got the capacity to feed others or whatever. But wasn't there more, social, economic, and other developments?
Again, just a few anthropologists, and I haven't had the time to survey how few that is. I don't know if a few means 50% or 10%, but a few anthropologists support this meat brain theory. The rest of the anthropologists support the social brain theory. And this is saying that everything to do with society, which has to do with living in larger numbers, especially if you're trying to outwit your rival, right? If you're a male animal and you want to have the choice of female animals, it serves you better to outwit your rivals in these larger social groups. It has to do with sharing food. It has to do with the development of morality, the sense of justice and fairness and empathy. It has to do with planning for the future, some sort of these like really beginnings of nascent economics. The areas of the human brain that grew, which relate to what social pressures cause the human brain to grow, if you're looking at this relationship, are areas especially for planning the future, which is in the prefrontal cortex, or the development of language.
Jerry, we need to take a break, but we'll spend a few more minutes after the break with Jerry Friedman discussing size matters and the human brain and meat eating. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. And if you want to feed your brain the healthy carbs, the good vegan protein, good vegan fats, you have a choice of over 6,000 vegan items at Viva La Vegan Grocery in Rancho Cucamonga. And now there is kind of a mini Viva La Vegan that has opened in Santa Monica on Ocean Park and 28th. The website is VivaLaVeganGrocery.com. You can order online. And we're talking to Jerry Friedman we're debunking the myth that the human brain has grown to where it is today because of meat eating and hunting. And I've heard hunters talk. I think that it stopped at a certain point. You know what I mean? If we're going by, brain growing based on
right.
Hunters, hello. But you, Jerry, are saying that really the brain developed in a more socialized environment, developing social and economic and community defensive skills, etc.
Yeah, all of the evidence shows that. And actually, you bring up a good point because since about 20,000 years ago, the human brain has been shrinking. And that's something that this meat brain hypothesis doesn't really address, because 50,000 years ago, humans started large-scale or full-scale hunting. That's when hunting really took off, around 50,000 years ago. And then 20,000 years ago, the brain started shrinking. And so why is it that as humans have been eating more and more meat, well, then all of a sudden the brain reverses course? And so there's not a very good explanation how meat starts by causing the human brain to grow, and then it starts to turn around as we're eating more meat. And so that kind of suggests this hunter theory that you're saying, that maybe the intelligence of the human race is going backwards now.
Oh, well, judging by social behavior, war and meat eating and everything humans do, we'd be better off with, perhaps a brain the size of a pigeon. We're not doing very well with the brain we have. So we have maybe another couple of minutes left. Was there anything you wanted to address regarding this that we haven't discussed?
Yeah, well, I think for the vegans out there who get stumped with this question, a couple of interesting things. That, for example, spider monkeys and howler monkeys, they both eat fruit, fruit and leaves, actually. But the spider monkey who eats the fruit, who gets more calories from fruit, their brain grew twice the size of their cousins. And then you can think the same thing with chimpanzees and bonobos, because chimpanzees, they hunt, they eat a little bit of meat, but their brain is the same size as bonobos. And so hunting and eating meat hasn't helped the chimpanzees have a larger brain. And then otherwise, I'm not saying that our ancestors did not eat meat. Just the real point that I'm making is that meat didn't have anything to do with brain growth, because we know that our ancestors ate meat. We just have there is no good evidence to say that eating meat has anything to do with the size of our brain. And so I'm hoping that those of your listeners who hear this, that they understand that it's just it's propaganda. It really comes down to propaganda.
And why does size matter when it really comes down to, you know, how the size is used? You know, I mean, like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I mean,
exactly. Einstein had a smaller than average size brain. Obviously, he was brilliant, and in his last few years, he was vegetarian. So if that means anything.
And coming up in a few minutes, we're going to hear from Mary Finelli of Fish Feels. And generally speaking, people think that fish is brain food, which is another one of those indications that our brain may have grown, but, you know, isn't
That's
coming
marketing.
To...
it's marketing for you.
It's marketing, right? Mercury is a good supplement for your brain. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So life in Texas is treating you well as a vegan?
It's an unusual experience being vegan in Texas, but I have found other vegans, and there's an organization here called the Vegan Society of Peace. Every year they have a veg fest, so there are like minds here, and every now and then I meet more, and, you know, we're coming out, you know. I just met a student today who said a couple of years ago he read some stuff by Peter Singer, and he became vegan, so it's happening here in Texas.
Well, hard to believe. I wish Peter Singer would read his stuff and go vegan himself. Peter, read your own material, you know. I was in Houston a few years ago for it was a vegan chili cook-off, and it was massive, you know. So there's a vegan movement everywhere. Jerry Friedman, thanks for being with us today on Go Vegan
Thank
Radio
you,
with Bob Linden. It's great having
you
here. And you can see your presentation on YouTube regarding brain size. And coming up, Mary Finelli and Fish Feel and Professor Gary Francione, Animal Rights Commentary. Greetings once again, and welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Yes, we have expanded to 2 hours as we are nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. We're live Sundays from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Programs are archived at goveganradio.com, where you can make a tax-deductible donation to support us and help us pay for radio airtime and the many programs which we create. We're going to create a vegan conference. We have to. So, if you've been listening to the show over the course of the last few weeks, hopefully, you know, we've really grossed you out and created enough fear in you to where, you know, we're sounding the alarm bells, red lights flashing, like, you've just got to stop eating chicken, you know, Foster Farms, cows, you know, have to stop eating so-called beef and dairy, you know, Rancho Feeding Company. You have to stop eating pigs, you know, I mean, because they're, after all, we talked about this viral diarrhea epidemic in pigs. So, I mean, these are like flashing red lights that should be, and in a moment, we'll give equal time to fish. But with all these flashing red lights, it's time to see the green light. Green light, time to go vegan, that is. Green Light Meals makes it easier than ever with great-tasting, nutritious meals delivered right to your door wherever you are in the USA. Green light, time to go to the website, greenlightmeals.com. That's green, L-I-T-E, meals.com. Because you care about animals, the environment, and the health of your family, check out the menu at greenlightmeals.com. Breakfast choices include tofu scramble, breakfast burritos, banana walnut pancakes, cinnabon, oatmeal, and more. Ah, what do vegans eat, huh? Not just cardboard, huh? Entrees include chipotle falafel with sweet potato burrito. That's not Chipotle from the restaurant chain, Chipotle, by the way. Baked bean and veggie chili tofu fritters with hot pepper relish, and you have root vegetable soup, lentil soup, stuffed peppers. I mean, it's just an amazing menu that you can check out there. And for the kids, how about chickpea tenders with dipping sauce or mac and trees? Greenlight Meals even delivers delicious smoothies. How about blueberry lemon zest, carrot cake, strawberry shortcake, PB&J? You know, just check out the website, and there is a meal plan that's right for you. And when you sign up for one of the particular ones there, you'll accelerate your fitness and weight loss goals. With consultation and workout plans from Melissa Bray, Greenlight Meals fitness and nutrition consultant, certified personal trainer, nutritionist. She's on the program every Sunday in January. You can check out those shows. And again, check it out and start having these great meals delivered right to your door. It's greenlightmeals.com. And right now, I would like to welcome Mary Finelli to the program. She is a longtime animal rights activist who has worked for various organizations. She produced Farmed Animal Watch, a weekly online news digest that has been a major contributor to AR News and Animal Net. She has a BS in animal science, and she is the president of Fish Feel. How are you today, Mary? Welcome to the show.
Good, Bob. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Terrific. Okay. So, Mary, why do you feel and see a need for an organization devoted exclusively to advocacy for aquatic life?
Well, as you mentioned, I have been involved in animal rights for about 3 decades now, and most of that time has been spent in dealing with farmed animal issues. And, you know, I just continued to notice that fish, although they constitute, the greatest category of exploited animals, and arguably suffer the worst, some of the worst abuses, they just were getting so little attention, even within the animal protection community.
Mm-hmm. Right, that is true. And tell us about, well, you say they are the most abused in numbers. Tell us about their exploitation.
Okay. Well, there's about an estimated 8 billion land-based farmed animals that are killed annually for food in the U.S., and that compares to a conservatively estimated 60 billion fish are killed for the same purpose. So the number is just, you know, astronomically higher than the number of land-based animals, and we know how horribly land-based animals are treated. And fish are treated as bad, if not worse. The ones that are wild caught or die of decompression. When they bring them up, they catch them in these huge nets, and there's just massive number of fish in there, and they're crushed or suffocated. They die from decompression, where their organs burst and come out of their mouths. The ones that do make it to the surface are killed in just horrific ways. There are no laws, no state laws, no federal laws regarding how fish who are used for food can be treated, and really anything goes. They're killed, cut up alive. They're put on ice and frozen to death. They're left to suffocate. Basically, anything and everything goes. And the ones that are farmed are treated comparably as bad. They are kept in crowded, filthy conditions and subjected to all sorts of horrible handling procedures and killed in the same type of inhumane way.
Hmm. And, some people might be thinking, well, do fish have feelings?
Yes.
Can fish feel?
Yes, and they do. And I think a lot of people intuitively realize that they do, but for those who have doubted it, it has been scientifically shown that they do feel pain. There have been experiments done where they've been subjected to things like having bee venom injected in them, and they react as if they're experiencing pain. And when they've been given painkillers, they act as if they're, you know, the pain has been alleviated. And they do things to show, like, they'll be very shy, you know, as if you had been hurt. If a person undergoes painful experience, they tend to not want to be around others, and they stay in a darkened area where they ordinarily would go into the light, and they just react in ways that indicate that they are suffering.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, when I first was on my path toward veganism, and I didn't know any vegetarians or vegans in my life, so I was kind of feeling my way around it, and initially I was rationalizing in my head, as a lot of people seem to do, and I was thinking, well, you know, maybe the oceans are here to feed us. And then I thought, you know, they're gasping for their lives, they're suffering too, you know, it's you can't really, you know, a lot of people seem to consider fish as part of being vegetarian. I saw some weird person on Twitter who called herself a bivalve vegan. I think she thought creatively because valve ended with V-E and vegan starts with V-E. So she could, you know, suddenly be cool and be a vegan, but, you know, and still eat clams and mussels, you know, animals who have hearts and feed and all. And so she's still a meat eater, but people, I don't know, they just, you're right, the fish are ignored in the process. And like you say, 8 billion land animals compared to 60 billion aquatic animals. And
that's just fish. There's more than that in shellfish. It's 40 billion shellfish. So the numbers are truly astronomical. And when they're capturing these animals, they're also killing whales, you know, inadvertently capturing and killing whales and dolphins and seabirds and so many other non-targeted animals are also caught and killed. And a lot of fish that they're not really intending to catch are caught and also just thrown back in dead or dying back into the sea, or used for animal feed or fertilizer, ground up and used in for fertilizer. Just, you know, it's just colossal waste.
Right. Isn't like half the catch, I think, fed to farmed animals for animals who will
it's
be eaten?
It's something along that line, yes. Actually, on the website, we do have a graph that shows the proportion of which, how these animals are used. But a huge proportion is fed to farmed animals, and a lot of that is to farmed fish, because most of the fish who are raised are carnivorous, so they're feeding them fish. And in fact, they're desperately seeking alternatives now, because they're actually running out of the wild caught fish to feed the farmed fish. So it's
right,
really
that's insane, right? I mean, you have to feed a lot of fish to create.
Oh yes, it's just so disproportionate. And then, of course, also consuming these animals, fish and fish oil, which is so popular now, is hazardous for human health, because these animals, a lot of the fish that they use are towards the top of the food chain, so they're eating other animals and ingesting mercury is a real problem, and PCBs and dioxin, all these toxins are accumulating in the fish, and then when a person eats that, they're, of course, eating all this accumulated toxin, and which, of course, is not good for us. So
Right. Now
there's so many terrific vegan alternatives, including vegan seafood, that it's just there's no good reason to be eating fish.
Right. I mean, high in cholesterol, and like you say, people have called fish a brain food, but actually it's is like a destroy-the-brain food when you think of all the mercury ingestion. I mean, there's really rampant mercury contamination, heavy metals, and that would be the same in fish oil, too, that everybody's taking, concern for heavy metals, PCBs, mercury, because the toxicity gets stored in the fat. So
right, and then of course there's also the chance of fish oil going rancid, which they've done tests and shown a relatively high proportion of fish oil does tend to get to become rancid before it reaches the consumer, and that can put out free radicals, which are potentially carcinogenic. So you know you're really taking a very unnecessary risk by ingesting those fish or fish oil. And if you're looking for omega-3s, which is what a lot of people consume fish oil for, there's great sources of vegan omega-3s. You can get it through walnuts or flaxseed oil, chia seeds, hemp seeds, soy products, or you could get algae supplements, which is where fish obtain their omega-3s from. So you could get it, you know, directly from the plant source instead, which is, of course, much safer.
Yeah, get it from where the fish get it. Eliminate the middle fish, right?
Oh, and go directly to the
source. Yeah, we have to take a break. We're talking to Mary Finelli, president of Fish Feel. The website is fishfeel.org, fishfeel.org. Also on Facebook. And we will continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, on Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. Like us on Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and there are two Bob Linden pages there if you can squeeze in. They're usually maxed out at 5,000 each. So today we are talking to Mary Finelli. She is the president of Fish Feel. The website is fishfeel.org. You can also find Fish Feel on Facebook. And, as I mentioned, I won't be doing a show next week. As I go to the Natural Products Expo in Anaheim, I'll just be wandering around the Anaheim Convention Center. So the next new program will be 2 weeks from today. But I'm looking forward to some of the alternatives to eating fish products that I find at the Natural Products Expo. I really like the foods put out by Sophie's, and Vegetarian Plus has a really good vegan shrimp. So, if you like the taste of seafood, just throw some seaweed in, you know, with what you're eating. But so, Mary, we've been talking about in numbers alone, in sheer numbers, the most abused animals on Earth, aquatic life, fish, and... you know, a lot of times people look at, well, fishing as recreation, you know, this strange sport that's actually, you know, it's really trickery and deceit. Like if you went into Whole Foods and bit into an apple, you know, and it stuck in your mouth and then it dragged you like through the streets and into the river, like, I don't see the sport of that. But a lot of people seem to be proponents of, you know, catch and release fishing now, and don't see a problem with that. I imagine you see a problem with it.
Well, sure. I mean, fishing is violence. You know, you're trying to catch and kill an animal, and you're subjecting them to terror and stress and injury, and oftentimes ultimately death, a very violent death. And catch and release, you know, you're catching this animal, you're subjecting them to terror, they don't know what's going on, they're injured, they have a hook in their mouth, and even if those animals, then oftentimes, of course, are taken out of the water, so they're subjected to the stress of not being able to breathe, and even if they're thrown back in, which, you know, a large percentage of them are, studies have shown that a large percentage of those ultimately do die of stress or injury or predation because they're traumatized. They're, you know, not on, on guard as they would be. They're sort of in a state of shock. And ultimately, they die. So I've seen studies that, depending on the species, as high as 89% of the fish who are thrown back in ultimately die from that experience. So it's not at all a peaceful, harmless pastime. It's a very violent.
Right, right. And, you know, there seems to be so much sympathy now for orcas with the movie Blackfish. I just wonder if we could, you know, extend our circle of compassion to the others swimming next to them. You know, I mean, shark finning is also one of those problems where they're just thrown back in the water, you know, without their fins to make an expensive bowl of soup. I mean, they really are oppressed, aren't they?
Sure. And actually, as far as catch and release fishing, it has been banned on humane grounds in Germany and Switzerland. So some places are recognizing and acknowledging that. Mm-hmm. And, if you ever do go swimming and there are free living fish and you get to swim with them, you can realize they'll come right up to you. They just, like, it's like you can find a blizzard of fish. They'll swim around you, and they swim in such beautiful synchrony, and they're just really beautiful animals. And you know, there's so many myths about fish as far as them having like a 3-second memory, which is just ridiculous when you think of salmon who go out into the ocean and they're away sometimes thousands of miles and years from their home, and yet they find their way back home to spawn. And they even, I shouldn't say even, but also, you know, going from salmon, wild salmon, to domestic goldfish can be taught skills and learn things. And people who have companion fish, the fish seem to know them, and it can differentiate them from other people. And there's about 30,000 different species of fish. So there, you can imagine the diversity. And fish have been known to communicate with each other. They can learn from each other. They can pass knowledge from generation to generation, which is the basis of culture.
Of course, they survived all these years in the ocean. We couldn't do that. Humans couldn't do that. And a 3-second memory would be about 2 seconds more than most humans I know anyway. So, and tell us, we might have a little short amount of time left here, but fishfield.org. You have some events coming up, and we have about 15 seconds. So
sure, and check out the website. We have vegan seafood resources on the recipes and products, and there's even a vegan seafood cookbook. And check out our Facebook pages. We put information on there daily. And Gardein has just come out with golden fishless fillet.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mary Finelli, for being with us today. It's fishfield.org. It's got educational events. Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, with archives at GoVeganRadio.com. And I'll remind you that no new show next week. There'll be a rerun while I wander around the Natural Products Expo in Anaheim. Then back on March 16th with a review of the wonderful vegan products that I discover at the Natural Products Expo. And then the week after that, March 23rd, we will have a special program about supporting your local vegan restaurant. No, don't listen to HSUS or Mercy for Animals or PETA and put your dollars at Chipotle, or, you know, which is grown because of its deceptive animal welfare marketing, or Subway, or, you know, any of those places. It's like, support your local vegan restaurant, like Vegetarian House in San Jose, 100% vegan, organic. Actually, on the way back up from Southern California, I'm going to stop off there, one of my favorite restaurants in the world. Visit vegetarianhouse.us, and you're also lucky in the Bay Area because Vegetarian House offers catering for business functions. You have a wedding coming up. Make sure the food is right and fantastic, and it always is from Vegetarian House. 100% vegan, non-GMO, organic, Raw options available. Great desserts. Just check it out. 520 East Santa Clara Street, vegetarianhouse.us. And now it is time for Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione. He is the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school. His website is abolitionistapproach.com. He's also on Facebook with Abolitionist Approach. And his latest book is Eat Like You Care, an examination of the morality of eating animals. There is no morality to eating animals. It is immoral. That answers that for me. Okay, good night, everyone. Hi, Gary. How are you today?
I'm well, Bob. How are you?
Terrific. And
Bob, I want to talk about an article that was published in the New York Times yesterday by Nicolette Hahn Nyman, who, with her spouse, runs the Nyman Ranch, which produces Happy Meat.
Yes, I mentioned some of this in the open of the show today. Yes, please.
Okay, well, great minds think alike. And so what happened was, I don't know how deeply you got into it, but Nicolette has this essay called Support Your Local Slaughterhouse. Now, what she's whining about the fact that they have their animals killed in a slaughterhouse with other animal providers, and apparently the USDA has recalled all of the meat from this particular
Rancho Feeding Corporation, Petaluma.
Yes, the Rancho Feeding Corporation,
mm-hmm.
and so she's complaining because they're recalling her meat, and she says that her meat is fine, and it's just the other people's meat that's problematic and blah blah blah.
Because hers is grass fed and organic. We should note,
right? Grass fed, organic, no hormones, and indeed the cows. You know, the cows are lining up to be slaughtered as Nyman cows. But in any event, so she puts out this article, which is really just, it's one long whine actually. But
I know.
And she says, well, we operate a small meat company supplied exclusively by our ranch and 9 other ranches that all follow the same protocols. Complying with this recall would mean destroying over 100,000 pounds of meat we had intentionally frozen throughout the year to extend our beef season. Oh, it's so horrible for Nicolette. Let's not worry about the cows. It's horrible for Nicolette.
It's horrible that they won't be getting the money for that frozen.
But Bob, I tell you, I read this paragraph that I'm about to read to you. And it just made, it horrified me, actually. And here's the direct quote. While it's painful to see our beautiful animals die, my husband Bill, or our cattle manager, has always accompanied every single one to the slaughterhouse stunning area. Being handled by a familiar person reassures the animals and guarantees that none is ever mistreated. We have advocated that everyone raising livestock do the same. Now, that is blood-curdling, in my view, that paragraph. It's painful for her to see the animals die because her husband Bill or their cattle manager, they accompany every animal and the animals are handled by a familiar person, which is really in many ways just the sickest sort of betrayal. But, you know, you read this and you say, this is really horrible. Now, I want to read the end of it because the end of it is the final line is that if allowed to stand, it, meaning the recall, will be financially devastating for us, poor Nicolette, and for many other farming and ranching families, but even more abhorrent is the waste. We took the lives of our animals to feed people. Being forced to throw away that meat would be sacrilege. So if we waste them, they're things. You see, they're things. They're commodities. They're things that we use. There are things that we treat exclusively as means to our ends. We bring them into existence, and we kill them. We take the thing that is most important from them because we enjoy the taste.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case,
we enjoy the profits of the
right. Exactly. But yeah. We as consumers, she does mm-hmm. it for the profit.
Mm-hmm.
We do it for the taste. Consumers do it for the taste. So basically, if we waste the animals, if we don't use them efficiently as the property that they are, that is a, quote, it's not just a waste, it's a, quote, sacrilege. Now, you look at this and say, how horrible, how absolutely horrible, how could anybody think that this is an okay thing? However, here's the problem. Go to the Global Animal Partnership. The Global Animal Partnership is the organization which devises the standards for the Whole Foods Happy Meat Program. Who's on the board of directors in addition to Wayne Pacelle, CEO of HSUS, but the manager of the Nyman Ranch? I think his name is Paul Willis. I don't know. I looked at it before.
I think so.
You're right.
Great minds think alike. And,
yeah, is it Paul Willis?
Paul Willis, manager of Nyman Ranch, pork company, and owner-operator of the Willis Free Range Pig Farm.
Pig Farm, yes, right. So there's Paul Willis. And then you have Peter Singer, the, quote, father of the animal rights movement, sending a letter expressing appreciation and support for the, and that's a quote, appreciation and support for the, quote, pioneering, end quote, animal compassionate program of Whole Foods, the Whole Foods Happy Meat program. And it is signed not only by our father, Peter Singer, but by HSUS, Farm Sanctuary, Mercy for Animals, Vegan Outreach, PETA, Viva USA. All of these organizations, all of them, are supporting this sort of thing. And I think this is the problem. You look at this and you say, this is sick. I mean, when I read this New York Times piece, I said, this is really sick. But how do you, I mean, on what grounds can you criticize it if you're working within the framework of the corporate animal protection, or whatever? I don't want to call it animal protection. It's certainly not an animal rights community. I don't even want to call it an animal protection community. The animal charitable exploitation community. How can you criticize it? And the answer is you can't. You can't because you're praising it. You're basically making a normative statement that this whole happy exploitation thing is good. And indeed, you are supporting an organization. I have not seen any criticism from any of the large groups of the fact that Pacelle is sitting on the board of directors of the Global Animal Partnership. Have you? Because I haven't. Maybe I have not.
And he's there with John Mackey, and like you said, the guy
right,
from the Nyman Ranch.
John Mackey,
everybody else is from agriculture. Big animal is from animal agriculture on this board of directors.
What's really interesting to me is, last week, PETA started circulating some petition objecting to the fact that Whole Foods is selling its meat under a big animal compassion. You know, every serving has a hearty load of compassion or something like that. They have these signs up. I think over in the Bay Area, actually, they have signs up advertising that their meat is made with compassion. And there are actually signs, variations of those signs all over the place. The one near where I live here on the East Coast has similar sorts of rhetoric. And PETA's objecting to that. Well, on what grounds is PETA objecting to that? They signed the letter with Peter Singer expressing appreciation and support for the pioneering program. Mm-hmm. So how can you do that?
How can you be having
your name, as Ingrid Newkirk does, if PETA, she has her name on a Bell and Evans advertisement promoting Bell and Evans chicken, which is on the Bell and Evans website, at least it was several days ago when I last looked, and then object to the fact that Mackey is using the concept of compassion in selling his meat when these organizations all were standing there and cheering him on.
With the Global Animal Partnership. And this is deeply disturbing. Yeah, so I went to the Global Animal Partnership website, you know, and in order to get the label on your dead animal flesh,
yes.
It says, quote, in essence, step one prohibits cages and crates, End quote.
Right.
So that's it. You don't have to go to step two or five or whatever. Just to get the label, it prohibits cages and crates. That means not prohibited, you know, intensive overcrowding. You know what I mean? It's not prohibited to castrate without painkillers. It's not prohibited, you know, to have nose rings in pigs. It's not required to have any access to pasture. I mean, it's nothing. The allowable crowding density for cows from the Global Animal Partnership is 250 square feet per cow, less than the industry standard of 350 square feet per cow. Global Animal Partnership is nothing. It's nothing other than the animal rights deal of approval on cruelty and killing. Whoops,
exactly.
We got to take a break.
Exactly.
We have to take a break. So, okay, we'll continue with Professor Gary Francione. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. No show next week, Gary, because I'm going to the Natural Products Expo, but we'll be back the week after that. We'll continue with Professor Francione coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, archived at goveganradio.com. GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Facebook, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden. There are two Bob Linden pages on Facebook also. We're talking to Professor Gary Francione. We've been talking about the Global Animal Partnership, which is the animal rights seal of approval on cruelty and murder of animals to make people feel good about buying such products with the Global Animal Partnership seal. And just to point out, Gary, the board of directors, George Seaman is with Organic Valley and Organic Prairie, you know, so these are all related to animal exploitation. Leah Garces, USA Director, Compassion and World Farming. There, you know, Stephen Gross.
Well, interestingly, Bob, Compassion and World Farming, there's an interesting tidbit about them, and that is several years ago they put out a report. I believe the report was called Laid Bare. And it's one of the links on the site on www.abolitionistapproach.com, my site, and they put out this report saying that the enriched cage was a disaster and that it did not address the basic welfare concerns of the hens. Hmm. And then all of a sudden, as HSUS did, HSUS was critical of the enriched cages, and interestingly, it was HSUS and Compassion and World Farming that were in the forefront of promoting the entire enriched cage movement, with Compassion and World Farming pushing it in Europe and HSUS pushing it here. But both of those organizations had been opposed to the enriched cage, and claimed that it did not address the basic welfare concerns of the hens. And then both of them did a flip flop, and
right.
Indeed started promoting the enriched
as did all the groups: Farm Sanctuary, Mercy for Animals, Compassion Over Killing. They all did a flip flop, and I keep asking them what changed from one day to the next. It was unacceptable one day, then the next day it's acceptable. But let's also on this board, Stephen Gross, chairman of Farm Forward. Now, Bruce Friedrich was on the board of Farm Forward when it implemented a $151,000 grant to a turkey farmer from ASPCA funds. You know? I mean, weird things like that. So this board is all, you know, animal exploitation. The perishable manager of Whole Foods is on there, along with John Mackey, Wayne Pacelli, the owner of Probert Ranch and former executive director of Country Natural Beef, and the guy from Nyman. So look who's creating the standards for, you know, for animal welfare.
Yeah,
it's all the people killing the animals.
I wasn't aware of the relationship of Farm Forward to the grant, the ASPCA grant, but which I did hear about. I wasn't aware that I don't remember the
connection. Yeah, it was Good Shepherd Turkey Farm, I believe, in Kansas, and it was for expanding the turkey barn so we could create more eggs.
I do know that Bruce Friedrich, formerly of PETA and now of Farm Sanctuary, was on the board of Farm Forward, which is, again, one of these happy exploitation organizations. But you see, this is the problem with the entire happy exploitation movement, is when you see something, you know, I don't think there's any animal advocate who read the New York Times and read that essay by Nicolette Hahn Nyman who wasn't repulsed and didn't think it was just obscene that she was talking that way and talking about how she suffers, how the pain that she has when her animals are brought to the slaughterhouse, and how noble it is of her that they accompany each animal so that each animal is with a familiar, somebody, a friendly face is with them.
Yeah. Hey, weren't you the guy I trusted? Wait a second. Didn't I trust you?
A stunning gun is applied to their heads and they're shackled, hoisted, hung upside down, and cut into. They had somebody, they had a friend with them. And it's obscene. But yet, how do you, you know, I mean, what's the basis for criticizing it when you have all of the large organizations supporting the structure that makes this possible?
Mm. Now, if she says it's painful,
I'm concerned about also when I see things like PETA being critical of Whole Foods doing exactly what PETA's praising, because it makes me think, gee, you know, depends on what day of the week it is and to whom they are talking, what their position is. Mm-hmm. And that's just wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they have, you know, they on one hand they say, oh, we're not in favor of happy exploitation, yet they sign a letter expressing appreciation and support.
It makes no sense. And if it's painful for Ms. Nyman, it must be wrong, right? Well, if something's causing her so much pain, she has to know it's wrong, or it wouldn't be causing her pain, right? So,
indeed.
Gary, we'll take the week off next week and then be back 2 weeks, and I'm going to scout out a venue to have a vegan conference in Southern California.
We should have a vegan conference, Bob. Let's commit to have a vegan conference.
We are. We're going to make one happen. Okay, thanks for listening. You're-